CDs, tapes, and videos, radio and TV shows, conferences, retreats, and seminars. We got books and magazines to read on everything from A to Z, and a web to surf from anywhere we are. But I hope with all this information buzzing through our brains, that we will not let our hearts forget the most important thing. It's love, 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 love.
Time tonight, as this past Wednesday was Valentine's Day, I thought today would be a good time to kind of talk about relationships. Now, I know most of you either had a great Valentine's Day or, you know, things didn't go quite according to plan, but either way, we're going to give you some advice on relationships and talk a little bit about the importance of having both connection and clarity in relationships. And we got some special guests joining us from Focus on the Family, actually. Steve Waters is actually the director of young adults for Focus on the Family, and his wife, Candace Waters, is joining him tonight. Mr. Waters and Mrs. Waters, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Hey, great to be with you, yo.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys taking some time out to do this show. Steve, you and I talked a little bit on the most depressing day of the year. And,
that's right.
And so now this is going to be somewhat more of a lighthearted topic, I hope. Now, before we dive on into some of this stuff, as is my nature, I do have some obscure facts to share with everyone about Valentine's Day. Did you know that Valentine's Day is actually the most popular time of the year to seek a divorce attorney? Attorney,
oh, wow.
Sad but true. And also, 77% of people think that they're going to find love on the internet, which is, I thought was kind of interesting that the internet is becoming more of a relationship hub, especially with places like MySpace. And one other thing that you might be interested to know about Valentine's Day, the official scientific name for kissing is philematology. So just in case you want to woo someone with your scientific knowledge, there's a little extra tidbit for all of you. If you had a little trouble this past Valentine's Day, next time you'll know, say, hey, philematology, we should look into that. But only if you're married or seriously dating. I don't know. So Steve and Candace, thank you so much for joining me tonight. Now, you guys work on boundless.org, online magazine for Focus on the Family. Why don't you tell everyone a little bit about yourselves and what Boundless is all about before we dive into this topic any further?
Yeah, I'll let Candace kick off since she was the founding editor of Boundless 8 years ago.
Okay, cool.
Well, yo, we started Boundless primarily for college students and wanted to do something online because we knew that that's where the demographic was hanging out, and also it'd be a lot easier to keep track of addresses that way, or not keep track of them, as the case may be. And so we launched it, and we had a focus on college students for about 6 years, and then in the past 2 years have shifted that focus almost with the first readers. Moved it more toward focusing on the 20-something years, the single years.
Uh-huh.
And so now we've got a real tight focus on the post-college years, targeting the 20-something into the early 30s crowd. Steve, do you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, our goal is just to really help people to live their single years intentionally, to be good stewards of their time and money and career and relationships, and to recognize this is one of the most prime seasons of their life, and that God wants them to view this time of life through the eyes of the prayer to the Ephesians that says that He's able to do exceedingly abundantly more than we could ask or imagine, and for people to view this boundless season of their lives through the eyes of a boundless God who's able to do some exciting things in their lives.
All right. Well, now you guys just started this new campaign called Define the Relationship, and that's kind of what we want to focus on tonight for people. Explain really quick what the Define the Relationship campaign is, and for people listening, if you're interested in checking this out, if you got some questions about defining relationships, we'd like to encourage you to first take this assessment test. It's at boundless.org/DTR. You can go through that, check that out. Doesn't take long to do the test, and then you can ask Steve and Candace some more pointed questions. And why don't you guys explain a little bit what this Define the Relationship campaign is?
Well, we've heard the line DTR, people doing DTRs or needing to do DTRs. And in fact, I know it's big on a lot of Christian college campuses and in Christian circles. But what we've heard from a lot of people is that a DTR can scare a couple to death, that maybe they've been growing in a relationship, recognizing that something's there, that there's some kind of connection, but beginning to wonder exactly where it's going, if it's got potential, if they're exclusive with each other. And the more they begin to have a sense of connection, but without having a sense of clarity, there is that loss of definition. And though there is some sense that maybe they need to define it, there's also that fear that if they try to talk about it, they'll ruin the delicate dance of a relationship and that they'll scare the other person off. And maybe they shouldn't be thinking about marriage anyway. Maybe they should just enjoy their time together. And so we're just trying to encourage people to do an inventory, to look at all the evidence of connection, compare that with the evidence of clarity, and see if maybe it is time for a little more clarity about what the relationship is and where it's going.
So it's kind of like a whole fish and cut bait type of thing, huh?
Well, you know, it really is. In fact, the idea of cutting bait might not be a bad thing for some people. That it's easy to just kind of drift along in an okay relationship, and maybe the best thing is to move on and to be able to focus your energy on the person that's right for you instead of the person that's almost right for you.
Yeah, you know, I was talking with Jason Illion. I don't know if you guys are familiar with him. He was like a former contestant on The Bachelorette, and he wrote this book on dating and, you know, the truth about dating. And you know, one of the things that he brought out, he's very much against kind of like the group dating mentality. And, you know, if you're going to go out and you're going to date, you might as well be intentional about it. You might as well date with purpose. And I noticed that was coming up in your guys', when I was doing the assessment, that kind of concept, the dating with purpose concept, seemed to be coming up a lot on some of the material that I was looking at for this define the relationship type stuff. Explain a little bit what it means to date with purpose.
Well, I don't know if you saw, Yo, we had a couple of articles on the website by an author named Scott Croft, and he's been doing a series that hits that pretty strongly and talks about the tendency in our culture to date more for recreation and to have somebody to hang out with on a Friday night and, you know, someone to go to parties with or have company on major holidays, but to let that become the driver rather than having as your intention dating for the purpose of marriage. It really gives you a different kind of dating relationship.
Uh-huh. And, you know, you're absolutely right so far as like the whole recreation when it comes to dating. I mean, you look at, you know, TV, movies and everything like that. It's just a pastime for people. Now, I want to dive into this a little bit more with you guys here in just a moment. We're going to take a quick break and we'll come right back and we'll talk about what exactly people will find when they do this define the relationship assessment, how it will give them some help, some clarity, as well as some connection in their relationships. And we'll get into that in just a bit. And then if you guys have questions, 505-338-5790. If you want to ask Steve and Candace some questions about what it means to define the relationship as we take a closer look at that on this post-Valentine's Day edition of Raw Talk right here on M88.
Love could be like this, powerful to protect me through the hard times that always exist. Make the hardest heart break down, make a person who hates love himself so he can love those around.
It takes love to forgive everyone for all the things they've done.
It's not easy, but the freedom will come. We gotta learn why it is that we're here. It's more than loving your life, it's making sure your life is loving your peers. Now if you could just catch my heart, then we can part from the past. Let the days of the new love start, because
love is a beautiful thing. It brings together people.
Well, I've got to make it clear, love's the reason we are here. We're the object of affection from a God who holds us dear. And everywhere we go and everything that we do, every time that we love, it's a reflection of you. Cause you are true love, so make it real enough.
Stop holding on to the past so we can bask in the rays. Let the days of the new love last, because
love is a beautiful thing. It brings together people.
And welcome back to Raw Talk here on M88, where we're talking about defining relationships. I know that can be a scary thing for some people, especially for the dudes. It's often a stereotype that guys are like, oh, what? Talking about the relationship. Hey, we're not fighting. Come on. Things are going great. What else do we need to talk about? If we're not fighting, then we're doing just fine. So I know it can be a scary topic for some people, but we have Steve Waters and Candace Waters from Focus on the Family here to talk a little bit about why it's important to define the relationship, and especially as Christians, why we want to do more than just dating for the sake of dating. Why dating maybe should be more than just a recreation for us as Christians. And so, Steve and Candace, thank you so much for being a part of tonight's program. And why don't you explain to people really quick what they're going to find when they do that assessment test, the Define the Relationship Assessment Test, which once again is at boundless.org/DTR. So if someone wants to check that out and then they have a question about it afterwards, you can call in and ask Steve and Candace about that. So explain to people what exactly they're going to find out when they take this assessment.
Well, the introduction first is going to be helpful for them to get a sense of who this best applies to. And it's not necessarily for the guy who's got a crush on a girl he's seen at the drive-thru at Wendy's over and over again. You know, he's trying to see if his relationship has potential. Mm. But it is for the couple who has spent some time getting to know each other. And there's two levels. There's a level here for those who have been hanging out forever, like my future wife and I did, as friends. Well, I mean, she's...
Future wife back when we were...
Exactly. Back then. I'm going to marry her someday. Now, actually, we're about to have our 10th anniversary.
Oh, but congratulations.
For a year or two before we got engaged, we just hung out forever, and people just thought we were friends. I mean, people wondered if we were just friends or if there was something there. So there's a level there for the person who's been in this friendship forever and wondering if it's moving towards something, as well as for the couple that's been dating for a long time in a very formal way, but wonder if it's moving towards marriage. And we've talked to couples who've been dating as much as 3, 4, 5 years who are still wondering, is this thing moving anywhere? Is this moving towards marriage? So those are the two levels we're talking about, some fairly close relationships. And then from that, it sets up the first part, which is looking at connection. And this could be, it's a variety of questions such as, it's statements that they can agree to. So things like, when in group settings, we tend to pair off. We spend at least an hour a week alone together. A reasonable observer would describe our communication with each other as flirtatious. This person has given me gifts, flowers, and their cards. We have held hands. So it's a variety of things regarding the time they spend together, the communication, their gestures of affection, even physical affection, the impressions they give others. And then from there, we compare that with their level of clarity. So clarity is everything from, how does this person refer to you to other people? Do they call you a boyfriend or a girlfriend? Have they told people that you're dating? Have they told people you're not dating? And then it talks about conversations you've had about the relationship or possibility of marriage. And then from that, it generates a chart where you see the connection and clarity bar side by side. And then after you put an email address in, we'll send a custom email that's detailed in response that describes what the nature of that relationship is based on if you indicated you're a guy or a girl, where the relationship is, and your scores. And so, like I said, that's a very customized response.
Now, when I took that assessment test, I did it right before I did the show because I wanted to sound somewhat knowledgeable about what I was talking about. I did very well on the connection side of it, and I don't know if I did worse on the clarity side because, like, since I'm already married, a lot of the questions didn't seem to apply, and I didn't know if I should check them or not. It's like, well, no, we're not talking about moving towards marriage. We're already there. So a lot of that might have skewed my results a little bit.
What you think?
Now, just looking from the graph, I mean, what do people want? Do they want, like, more connection than clarity? Do you want a balance of that? Do you want more clarity than connection? Like, what is good for people when they're taking this assessment?
Well, what's good is to have a fairly close parallel with clarity and connection, or to have more clarity than connection. Mm-hmm. The point we're trying to make in the introduction is that someone who has a lot more connection than clarity can begin to think, maybe this person I'm with is just taking for granted all the benefits of this relationship without trying to be clear
about who we are and where this is headed and whether or not this is exclusive or if they're enjoying this with other people, I like to see that in relationships, what's typically the case is that there are plenty of benefits for a relationship. There's having somebody to talk to, having somebody to hang out with. There's, you know, having somebody to kiss and hug and hold hands and do all these fun things with. But when it comes to marriage, moving towards marriage, there's a lot of responsibilities. There's a lot of risk. And what happens in a lot of relationships is they really focus on the benefits. But when it comes time to get into responsibilities and risk, and those are the things that are usually tied to the clarity side, there's a temptation to put those off as long as possible. And that's where I think people can begin to feel taken for granted and taken advantage of.
And I think the tendency in our culture would be for most of the people taking the test to see a higher level of connection than they do see of clarity.
Well, I
have to tell you, I took the test too last week, but I took it as if we were still back just friends, and I was wondering, where is this headed? I didn't take it as the wife, because it's not going to work.
All right. I'm sorry. I took it wrong.
You have to take it as if you were still dating.
Darn it. I didn't see, you know, that little asterisk that had that, if you're already married, pretend like you're still dating, and then I probably would have done better on it.
Well, you know, it is true that there are relationships now where there's almost an expectation that even among just good friends, there's an expectation of benefits that were used to be only reserved for people who are married. And obviously a lot of serious relationships, I mean, they just kind of play house. And so it does create a lot of confusion.
That's not just talking about sexual connection. It's also things like she does his laundry, she cleans his apartment for him, she cooks for him, she gives him quite a few emotional benefits and support in that realm. And so often the guys are not really needing to move it forward, and I'm not sure the women realize just how much they're impairing the relationship from moving forward.
Yeah, because a lot of the incentives that used to be there to move it forward are already available.
Yeah, well, that's something that we touched on again with Jason Illion not too long ago, and I thought it was a great observation. You know, he was saying that we are moving into a time period that's very rare in history where there's more single people than married people, because with single people married, they're acting like they're married. There's really no incentive to get married. You're enjoying all the benefits, and, you know, women are wondering, well, how come this guy isn't marrying me? Well, you know, you're already sharing the same bed, you're sharing the same, you're doing all that stuff. Why would he want to commit any further? He's getting all the benefits that he needs. And I thought that was a fascinating observation, because it's one I hadn't really thought about before. But it's certainly right on that, you know, if you're getting all the benefits, why bother committing further? And, you know, why bother defining the relationship? Things are going pretty good.
We see that often the guys are benefiting more from that setup than the women
are. Yes, they are.
The women have a lot more to lose.
Well, and two, what's happening is a lot of those relationships, they're enjoying it, they're benefiting from it, but they're holding out for a soulmate. You know, they've got this great thing going on, but they're keeping their eye open just in case that better option comes around the corner, keeping all their options open. And that's where I'm saying people can begin to feel taken for granted, taken advantage of, when someone is enjoying all these great things they're pouring out there, hoping it's moving somewhere, and in reality, they're waiting for their soulmate.
Again, we're talking to Steve Waters and Candace Waters from Focus on the Family, and they're a part of the Define the Relationship campaign. If you want to check out this assessment test that we're talking about, if you're in a dating relationship or a friendship that you're not sure if it's going to move into something romantic, you can go to boundless.org/DTR, take the assessment test, and then if you have a question about the results that you got, why not give us a call? 505-338-5790 is the number to call in, 505-338-5790. 5790 if you got any questions for Steve and Candace. Now, Candace, let me ask you, what are the benefits of, from a woman's perspective, of having a couple go through this? I mean, how is it going to benefit a woman to do this type of assessment test and get a better definition of what exactly kind of a relationship they're in?
Well, hopefully the guy, in addition to taking the test, will read Michael Lawrence's article. He talks a lot about the need for men to take the initiative and to assume the risk that comes with defining a relationship. And I think what readers might be surprised to find is that we do have a different response to the women. We're not saying that either man or woman can take the test, and either man or woman can then step up and say, okay, we got to decide, what is this relationship going to be? And for the woman to say, honey, will you date me? I mean, we're not wanting the women to step up and take the lead that the guys should be taking, but that doesn't mean that the women don't have a role to play. And for the women, the thing they can do is oftentimes something that they should not do, which is to not take the lead, but to be willing to step back, to cut back some of the access that she gives to him, and see if that absence of her presence, of her affection, and of her support might be the thing that motivates him to move the relationship forward.
Absence makes the heart grow fonder.
That's there right.
Yeah.
And I will say, I know thereof which I speak, because this is what Steve and I went through personally.
Hmm.
After being best friends intensely for a summer, I finally said, okay, look, I really want to get married, and I really hope it's to you, but if it's not, then I can't do this anymore. I can't be your best friend. I can't be your buddy without some kind of clarity about where this is headed. And so I basically asked him to be the leader, to make a decision, and was willing to lose the relationship, but knew that I didn't want to waste any more time because I wasn't getting any younger.
What was your response to that, Steve?
Well, it definitely reminded me that I couldn't take for granted that she'd always be there.
Hmm.
And that it reminded me I wasn't being the best steward of our time together. That I began to realize someday I'm going to have to give an account for the past however many months it had been, I guess over a year, of the time we had been spending together. God, at someday was going to say, now you give an account of how you were treating her heart and her time and her emotions during that period of time. And as I began to realize that she might pull away, I said, I can't just take this for granted. I've got a good thing here. And it made me realize that I couldn't just be keeping all my options open, waiting just in case somebody a little more perfect came along, that I needed to be honest
about.
Is
that even possible? Come on.
So I needed to look and appreciate what I had right in front of me and give it my full attention, my full focus, and realized that I needed to step up and take a risk, and that's fortunately what happened. And within a much shorter period after that, we were engaged and on to the rest of our lives.
And that is a sweet Valentine's story. I'm so glad we got to hear that. me and my wife kind of had like a similar experience maybe.
Yeah.
Well, actually, now that I think about it, it wasn't anything like that. Now I totally lost my train of thought. Now I was trying to think of how me and my wife matched up with that particular. Oh, how do you think this is going to help out Christians, especially maybe if they're in high school or if they're in college? And you know, a lot of people, you know, college is look for that perfect spouse first and education second. How is doing something like this assessment test going to help out people in high school, people in college, sort out this whole relationship mess that has been thrust upon us by today's society?
Well, I guess for one thing, it's helpful to recognize that even though that temptation is there to have a relationship, to have a companion, and obviously plenty of people around them who have, you know, the friendships with benefits and all these other categories of connections out there, to recognize that if they're not ready to get married, if they can't imagine themselves married within a year or two, and there are a lot of people in high school and college that just aren't there yet, that they should really be careful about what connections they do make. That it's not good for their own heart and for their own sexual temptations, as well as for the person that they're, quote, connecting with, because there is a good chance they can confuse each other. They can find themselves falling into sexual sin. And that's going to happen a lot for those who say, you know, I don't think I'm ready for marriage right now, but I do want a buddy. I do want somebody to hang out with and somebody to do all these fun things with. And that, like I said earlier, doesn't really fall into the category of dating with a purpose. So there, it's probably a better idea to just enjoy a lot of group activities and friendships without necessarily confusing it by adding in a lot of connection without clarity.
I would add to that, though, you know, I think we're hearing on Boundless from a lot of women who are saying that they are not interested in dating in college, certainly not toward marriage, that any dating they're doing is recreational. And I think then to contrast that with the women we hear from who are in their 30s who say, gosh, I wish I had paid a little more attention in college when I was surrounded by so many Christian, especially if you're at a Christian school, surrounded by Christian young men who were single at the time. And even though it may have felt a little premature to be thinking about marriage, that they walked away from an opportunity to meet a future spouse and are now wishing they hadn't done so. So for for the young women who have as a goal marriage and family, it really isn't too early to be thinking about it seriously in college, assuming you're not just dating for recreation, but starting to ask, okay, is this the kind of a man who could be a good husband, who could be a good father, who has the potential to be a responsible provider, and to be looking beyond just, is he cute, is he fun on the weekend, to could he be a life partner?
I know some people are hearing that and going, wow, that's kind of heavy. I'm not ready for that when it comes to dating just yet. 505-338-5790 if you have a question for Steve or Candace and would like to ask him about what it means to define the relationship. And honestly, I will relate something from my past. When I was growing up, high school and college, I was pretty oblivious. I had a lot of friends who I thought were girls. Now, my mom kept telling me that they kept hoping that I would wake up and take interest in them as girls and not just friends, but I was fairly oblivious. I didn't have a lot of interest, per se, in, you know, like any sort of serious romantic relationship, and I think for some of the years when I was growing up, this type of assessment would have been a big eye-opener for me so far as, because now when I look back at it, I really do realize I was probably very unfair to some of those young women insofar as, you know, I never really said one way or the other if I was, quote unquote, interested in them or if I just wanted to be a friend. I just assumed that they knew because, you know, everybody knows. I mean, come on. It's not that hard to figure out. If I wanted to be romantic, I would act romantic. But, you know, that was in my own little head. And obviously, it was kind of confusing for some of them now that I look back on it. And so I could see where this type of assessment probably would have helped me out when I was growing up. And so now I'm kind of bummed you guys didn't do this earlier. So thanks a lot.
Yeah, I could have used it myself. I mean, I took the very same approach. In fact, I thought that I was pretty ingenious in college. I had really come on strong to this one girl I was interested in and realized that she wasn't interested at all. And as I realized just how awkward and embarrassing that was, I decided, you know, maybe it's a much safer for me to take the buddy approach and to just hang out and be buddies and to always be able to keep my options open and know that it could lead to something, but I could protect myself by just coming under the guise of friendship. But I recognized through Candace that that wasn't, once again, good stewardship, that I wasn't being careful with her heart by taking that approach, even though it was safe for me. It wasn't healthy at all for us.
Right. And I like how you keep bringing up this word stewardship. Let's talk about that a little bit. You know, a lot of people think of stewardship, oh, that applies to money, you know, tithing and offering. And I don't think a lot of people would equate that with relationship. Explain a little bit more. What do you think, like, a biblical definition of good stewardship in relationships would be?
Well, there will be a day where we know God is going to judge us for everything, and there's going to be all kinds of things that we're going to be a little uncomfortable standing before God and having to give an account of. But I think in relationships, we're going to find that there are a lot of things that are difficult for us to explain of how we spent some of our evenings with people of the opposite sex, some of the things we did in backseats of cars or in bedrooms or whatever. But there's another model. We mentioned Scott Croft earlier, and he said, you know, you should take the approach in dating anybody that you would be perfectly comfortable if things didn't work out sitting beside that person and their spouse in church someday, and that you wouldn't have any regrets. You wouldn't be embarrassed to be beside their spouse because you realized that you were above board, that you spent time getting to know each other, seeing if there was potential there, but not doing anything to rush in and take advantage of all the benefits of the relationship before really seeing if you were a match that God intended, and therefore you're not embarrassed because you know that you didn't do anything inappropriate.
That's so not what society teaches today. Now, Candace, what about you? What does it mean to be a good steward of a relationship from a woman's perspective?
Well, I think it's a little controversial to say it, but women need to be thinking about their fertility and being stewards of the timeline that they have. I know when I was 29 and newly married, I had a mentor who said, when are you going to have kids? And I said, well, you know, we've got to pay off some credit cards. We want to buy a house. And we have some financial goals and some career goals. And she just looked straight in my eyes and said, well, how do you know you'll still be fertile when you decide you're ready to have kids? And I had never ever thought of it that way. And both Steve and I come from Christian families, Christian parents, still married to each other. They had lots of kids and
Christian colleges
and even Christian OBGYN. And I just never had anybody confront me with the reality that my ability to have kids is a limited window of time, and that the opportunity to have children diminishes really starting at 30 and especially once you hit 40. Sadly, a lot of young women think because of what they see in the tabloids and in the magazines at the supermarket that it's perfectly fine to wait till you're 40 and then it's really easy to have multiples. And, I just don't think they stop and realize what the stars, what the celebrities are paying in terms of infertility, technology, and sort of these high-tech approaches and borrowed wombs and other people's eggs. And, I mean, it's really a complicated thing. It's so much easier when you're 25 and you just decide to start having kids. It's like God designed us that way, but we don't hear that often enough. And so stewardship of your future role as mom is really something that young women need to at least be aware of.
Well, and to tie that back to this, we had a coworker recently who said, you know, I wish I had pushed for definition in a relationship I had much earlier, because I dated a guy for 6 years and got to the point where I was throwing good years at bad, hoping that that relationship would finally lead to marriage. And then when it didn't, I realized this guy took away my prime childbearing years. And she said, I'm not sure if I'll ever be a mom because I kept waiting and waiting for that relationship to go somewhere.
Well, 505-338-5790 if you have a question about defining the relationship, and you can ask Steve or Candace or me, although I would not consider myself an expert at all in this particular area, which is why I have other people come on Raw Talk and talk about this stuff. But if you got a question about this Define the Relationship campaign, or just a question in general about what it means to define a relationship for Steve or Candace, 505-338-5790, as always, is the number for Raw Talk. Now, one of the things that I think we mentioned before we went on the air was that one of the things that might result from taking this assessment, from going through the necessary steps of defining the relationship, is you might have to break it off. Talk a little bit about why that could be a good thing, because generally a lot of people are like, you know, the whole term breakup, it's never good to break anything. So talk a little bit about why that might be a positive thing.
I heard a marriage researcher up in Denver named Dr. Scott Stanley talk about an inertia theory, and he was talking about it specifically in the context of cohabitation. But I think it applies into a lot of other relationships. He says within commitment, there's being wanting to stick together, having a loyalty and an attraction towards each other. And then there's being stuck together, where the trappings of the relationship hold you together. And he said in a lot of cohabitating relationships, people who are stuck together in the sense that they've got a shared rent together, they've bought stereos together or whatever, if they have a fight or realize that this person is really not a good person at all, they feel kind of stuck in the relationship and they just kind of drift on. And eventually they do, well, let's just get married. Let's just do the right thing. And then what happens is they turn out to have the lowest satisfaction in their marriages. Now, what I think happens is in a lot of relationships where they have tons of connection, where they're just emotionally bonded to each other, especially if there's any sexual activity that has a chemical bonding element to it. What can happen is people who identify, you know, maybe this person just has some major character flaws, they can just find themselves drifting, and maybe someday they get married and then realize, boy, maybe the best thing we could have done was be objective about what we had and break off. And they find that it's much harder later, you know, to go through divorce, especially when there's kids involved, that the decisions that they needed to make about that person's character and their ability to be a good spouse was something they should have made with a clear head, not with all the chemical connections of sexuality, with deep emotional intimacy and all this piled on connection that was keeping them from making an objective decision, and they were cloudy about the relationship.
Yeah, it certainly can be hard to make good decisions when amour is in the air. that can be challenging for even the most level-headed of people. Now, talk a little bit about how what's the response been to this? You know, with how society is so anti everything we're saying when it comes to relationships, I mean, you know, everything we've said tonight, at least that I can think of, has been like, you're never going to see that on Friends. Give me a break. You know, everyone does.
Maybe they shouldn't be watching Friends.
Yeah, well, that could be a symptom to begin with. But, you know, it just seems so contrary to what everyone's being told about, you know, relationships here in the modern 21st century. So what has been the response so far to the Define the Relationship campaign?
Well, we've had over 3,000 people take the campaign. And what's been most interesting is those who have indicated that they were sexually active, and then our response is specifically focused on just how much sex brings cloudiness and difficulty to get clarity into a relationship. And that's where we have had some people write back and say, you know, I really think you're being judgmental. You know, we're Christians, and I think we can be able to have sex appropriately, or I forget exactly how they phrase it, but they just don't appreciate us questioning that area. Now, I will say, though, we've had some guys write back who have gotten our comments about their sexual activity who say, you know, that's exactly what I needed to hear. Because I think a lot of what we're saying is common sense, but in an age where everybody is just trying to be somebody's friend and not wanting to say anything to hurt their feelings, they don't usually say what people need to hear. And people do need to hear, hey, look, God probably knew what he was talking about when he said don't have sex before marriage. And it's not just because he's this bad cop up there who wants to make our lives miserable. He actually has a design and purpose behind it. And the reality is, people who are sexually active before marriage don't often make the best spouses later. That there are, there was just a study just came out recently that showed with every premarital sexual partner you have, your potential for divorce doubles. And that people who are sexually active now, that typically they do have, I think CDC said the average sexually active premarital person has 3 to 5 partners. And so you're seeing this pattern of serial sexual activity, and all of that's bad for marriage. And people who hope someday to have a good marriage, to marry well, shouldn't be naive to think their sexual activity on the front end is not going to have any effect on it.
Now, there are a lot of churches who are kind of anti-dating. You know, they might say, well, the Bible doesn't talk about dating. If you're going to have a relationship, it better be a relationship that's moving towards marriage. And anything else is not what you should be doing. How would you respond to them? And how is this something that may help people who are in that type of church? Or is this something that if you're totally anti-dating, don't bother with it?
Well, you know, the thing we have found is that churches that really stress courtship, which is the concept that you are going into a relationship with the intention to see if this is someone you could marry, that you are going to go into it with the involvement of family if they're available. If family's not available, that you're going to have involvement from people in the church, and that you're going to have some accountability structure to make sure that you're not crossing the line sexually and in other ways. People in those relationships tend to not be as confused about what their connection means because they've gone at it from the beginning with a sense of intentionality. And so those in a courtship type relationship typically find that they would probably score very strong on the clarity side and perhaps lower on the connection side. So this is a lot more, probably a lot more focused on those who haven't necessarily taken that approach. And I recognize it can be intimidating for people to take that kind of courtship approach, but they do find that there is less frustration, less awkwardness, less sense of wasted years, and also less sexual sin if they do try to go through that approach. It's almost a pay me now or pay me later thing. The pay me now of a courtship is all the limitations you feel, but the pay me later of some nebulous dating relationships is all the confusion and frustration and sexual sin on the back end.
Well, and I would say too, yo, our experience has not been that the majority of churches function the way you described. That most of the churches we're seeing and that the readers of Boundless are coming from don't even address this topic.
Yeah, that's
people's
the other
relationships
problem.
Sort of, you know, they just kind of go under the radar screen. They show up on Sunday. They do the quote-unquote spiritual thing. And what they do the rest of the week with their boyfriends or with their girlfriends is really not up for discussion.
Hmm. Or well, they might even just focus on, you know, the gift of singleness or, you know, talk about how be like Paul. It's better to be single than, you know. And so I think it in that vacuum, they leave a lot of confusion.
Well, and that may be why so many young people are looking to shows like Friends or other pop culture messages to figure out how to do dating. Because maybe their churches aren't addressing it in a way that they can really feel like they're meeting their needs.
Well, I was going to say, you know, you hear a lot, especially in youth groups, about the don't ever have sex before marriage.
Right.
And that's about it. You know, you hear it's bad, yeah. It's yep. sin, God will be angry at that sin, maybe not angry at you, but angry at that sin, and that's a terrible thing to do, so don't do it, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it. But, like, there's never any advice, okay, so how do I relate to that cute girl over there? I don't want to have sex with her, I just like to talk with her.
Well,
any help here?
And you know, I think one of the biggest problems is that they talk about the don'ts, and they don't spend any time talking about the do's, as in D-O. If they spent more time preparing the young people for marriage and for family, if they talk to the young men about how do they work on their character so that someday they'll be a godly husband and a godly father, and to the young women, how can you prepare to be a godly wife and a godly mother? It really does change the dynamic of how those young people relate to members of the opposite sex, because they're looking at them as future husbands and wives and mothers and fathers.
Yeah, and how can we encourage our young men to view these women as sisters in Christ and feel like it's their responsibility to protect those women so that they will show up in marriage as women who haven't been taken advantage of, so that they're doing their part in how they treat them and also in making sure that they've got their eyes open for men who might take advantage of them. And that's, I know that's a foreign idea, but it does prepare them much better to be good husbands and to help these women to be guided safely into good marriages.
Well, and Steve, don't you think, too, that to talk to young people about abstinence without also talking about the promise and hope of marriage is to really only give them half a message. And
amen.
It really ruins. You can't talk about abstinence if you don't also talk about sex in the context God designed
it. And look at puberty starting earlier, and then the average age of marriage is mid-20s. And so you've got a good decade plus where people are really having to struggle with some serious sexual temptations. And if you're still just talking abstinence and not talking about intentional relationships with marriage in mind, you know, it's only lighting a powder keg.
And it can also be kind of paralyzing. You're told it's off limits, don't think those things, don't imagine those things, don't. And then, you know, I now pronounce you man and wife, do whatever you want. What? No, this is bad. When did that magically change? And I know a lot of people, you know, have struggles with that. If, you know, they might have never fallen, you know, they've been a virgin, they get married, and woo, man, I made it. Oh, wait a second, sex is off limits. No, I'm married, it's okay. I still feel weird about it. You know, it can be, I've heard a lot of people talk about how that's just so paralyzing sometimes to hear all the negative and never the positive. And then after they get married, they just don't know what to do.
Yeah.
Now, the other thing I wanted to touch on in Song of Songs, chapter 2 and verse 7, it says, daughters of Jerusalem, I charge you by the gazelles and does of the field, do not arouse or awaken love until it so desires. And as I was looking through this Define the Relationship assessment test, that really seemed like this was a verse that could apply to that and vice versa, so far as, you know, making sure that you don't arouse love before you're ready for it. Can you talk a little bit about how you think that plays? Am I totally off my rocker on that?
Well, I think it's important to clarify what that so desires phrase means, because taken one way could just mean don't awaken love until you think you're ready for love. Mm. And that's sort of the cultural mindset. That's sort of the mindset that says, now, honey, you know, you don't want to have sex until it's with the right person. That's sort of the Planned Parenthood approach.
Right.
But I think the biblical approach would be to say, don't awaken love prematurely. And in our culture, prematurely for a young man could mean until you're financially capable of supporting a wife and eventually children. Mm. For a young woman, don't awaken love before you are in a relationship with a man who has appropriately expressed his interest in the potential for marriage and is doing so under some sort of accountability and is demonstrating the kind of Christian character that you could envision yourself marrying.
Right.
Well, and also, you know, there's a book out there called Don't Marry a Jerk by Dr. John Van Ebb. And
that's
he
awesome.
Talks about how there are so many things in a relationship where they do arouse love. I mean, there are the nature of sex, the nature of emotional intimacy is created as an on-ramp into a deeper level of intimacy. But what happens is that so many people do that prematurely before they've done any character test, any sense of the ability of this person to commit, to be a good, responsible spouse down the road. And then they pay the price. And like we were talking about with the inertia theory, they kind of move their way into, because all the natural stuff kicked in, the on-ramp led to the interstate, and they realized they awakened love and moved down this path with someone who turned out to be a jerk. And so I think that's kind of what we're getting at, is recognizing if you can pause a little bit, recognize the connection's going to happen someday. It's not something you have to test drive like our culture encourages us to. The foreplay does lead to sex. I mean, all those things do have a natural progression. But to stop and think about what the relationship is and really, are you a good match in God's eyes? And is this something that could last a lifetime instead of the cultural attitude of just lasting as long as you love each other?
Well, let's be clear. Boundless is not out there saying you need to get married for the sake of getting married.
Right.
We really want people to marry well, to form marriages that have the potential to be highly productive in culture, in society, and for the kingdom.
Right.
Yeah, there's a great quote by a guy named Dr. Leon Cass who says, "We are stumbling onto the altar as if by accident." He said, "It's each couple on its own without a compass." And that's what we're seeing, is a lot of couples who just kind of back their way into marriage. And our hope is to help people go into marriage with some vision and preparation, because that's what's going to help them when the marriage hits the day-to-day, when it's about laundry and keeping a house clean and taking care of kids and all the dailiness of marriage. And you got to have something solid, a solid foundation to work from at that point.
I think kids and keeping a house clean, they kind of cancel each other out in my experience.
Well, that's for sure.
Absolutely.
Now, just to wrap things up, you know, we've been kind of talking along the lines of, you know, you take this assessment and lets you decide if you got a fish or cut bait. But what happens if you go through it and you find out, hey, we make really good friends? What do they do after that if they realize, yo, we're great friends? Where do they proceed after that if it's not like, oh, we're definitely moving towards marriage, or oh, we got to break this up? What happens if they're kind of like in the middle ground?
Well, this assessment offers the possibility that, you know, maybe they're not quite ready, and you know that they still need some time getting to know each other, but it does encourage them to keep in mind that as they're still getting to know each other, to not take the relationship for granted, that as a guy especially, not to just keep waiting around and enjoying this buddy while holding out for a soulmate, and not to just keep waiting until he's 100% sure that he's going to get a yes, that we really encourage guys to take a risk, to say, you know, the easiest way for a guy to get some sense of clarity in the relationship is to propose going to the next level. If he really sees there's potential there, that he should go ahead and step up and say, hey, could I have the honor of dating you? Or could I have the honor of being your husband? And to recognize that he might go down in flames, just like a lot of some of the best lovers out there who pursued.
No one likes hearing that.
But you know what? He might hear, I thought you would never ask.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's what we want guys to take on, that risk. And that goes back to the stewardship issue that, you know, if you look at the parable of the talents, God didn't, I mean, the master didn't specifically tell the servants exactly what to go out and do and how to use that money. He left it up to them to take some risk and to show some initiative. And that's something that guys aren't doing. They are waiting until there's 100% chance that they're going to hear the answer they want instead of taking a risk. And so that's what we're encouraging guys to do, even though that is not what the culture is asking.
Right.
Ron, in answer to your question about friendship, I don't think this generation struggles with friendship. in the sense that that's what everybody has. They've got their buddies. They've got their urban tribe that they hang out with. The problem is that people languish in friendships without ever moving to anything else. And I know when Steve and I were quote-unquote best friends, part of the problem that I saw was that no other guy would ask me out because the guys thought we were dating. But I knew we weren't dating. And so because my long-term goal really was marriage, not friendship, I wanted a husband more than I wanted a buddy. And so I think the women are going to have to ask themselves, all right, well, do I want a friend or do I want a husband?
Right. Well, Steve Waters and Candace Waters from Focus on the Family joining us. When we're talking about Define the Relationship campaign, again, if you want to check out that assessment, you can go to boundless.org /DTR to take that assessment, and these guys will get back to you and tell you how you assessed. any closing thoughts from you guys on this whole issue that we've been talking about tonight?
You know, I will add a caveat, something we share at the end of the introduction to the test, and it's that we know that you can't quantify elements of the heart. There's no secret formula. And so this assessment, you know, is something that we developed that we think can be a helpful tool, but it's not going to be, you know, the magic formula. We do think that by going through it, it's going to encourage people to think about things differently. It's going to encourage them to put their relationship in a different light. And so we just want to say we know that there's a chance it might not be entirely precise and there could be problems they find with it. But we do encourage people to recognize that stewardship is important and that this season of life they're in that seems like it's an endless youth, that, you know, a decade from now, they're going to be in a position like Candace and are now, where we're deep into family life and the career and other issues. And we look back and realize we're glad that we finally got some clarity and moved on in the rest of our life instead of staying in this perpetual cycle where it just seems to go on forever and ever. And to recognize that there is so much more life after getting through that transitional phase. And so even though it might be fun to just hang out and enjoy the relationship and not upset it by trying to define it or figure out where it's going, it's good to get to that place and move on and to get into the deeper chapters of marriage and all these other things that come later.
Anything you want to add to that, Candace?
I would just encourage people to take the test and also to read the articles on Boundless, because the test can help you figure out where you are and where you need to go. But the articles really flesh it out with practical tips for how to do that.
All right. Well, Steve Waters and Candace Waters, thank you so much for joining me tonight and talking about defining the relationship. So apropos, right around Valentine's Day, probably would have been better to do it beforehand because there's probably some people out there slapping their head. Oh, jeez, I wish I would have known.
Spent $100 on Valentine's.
Man, those flowers, you should have seen it. If I would have known this beforehand, it would have been totally different. So thanks so much for joining me tonight, guys. And hold on, I'll chat with you here a little bit more after we wrap things up. And next week, we're going to kind of switch relationship gears when it comes to what we're going to talk about here on Raw Talk. We're going to have a special guest, Alan Chambers, and we're going to talk about homosexuality and Christianity. Are they mutually exclusive? And we're going to examine that dynamic of relationship a little bit and get a biblical perspective on it, of course, and of course take your questions as well. So next week, sure to be an interesting one, as this particular topic is one that always seems to have people polarized. So that's going to be next week here on Raw Talk. And again, if you missed any part of tonight's program, you want to catch something that you might have missed, you can log on tomorrow, maybe by Tuesday, ma8.org. We'll have the Raw Talk podcast up and ready for you to download. So thanks so much for joining me. And don't forget, if you got a topic suggestion for Raw Talk, you can always email that to studio@m88.org. I'm your host, Yo, thanking you for joining us tonight on Raw Talk here on M88.